big shout out to you for making it through the hectic holiday season. This new year, get clean, quality, pregnancy nutrient support off your to-do list, including Ritual's best-selling essential prenatal multivitamin, designed with 12 traceable key ingredients to support a healthy pregnancy. With big changes coming up, take the small steps now and start today with 30% off a three-month supply at ritual.com/podcast. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Before we get started with this episode, I want to share something that I think could be a game changer for your classroom. Now, as a former special education teacher, one of the things I struggled with the most was creating activities, resources, and curriculum for my classroom. I did not realize that that was part of my job. I have spent the last 10 years developing the Autism Helper curriculum based on what was missing from my former classroom. And now we finally have a way for school districts to purchase this curriculum directly for their teachers. The Autism Helper Curriculum Access is an annual subscription that provides access to all levels and subjects of our curriculum. This curriculum is rooted in evidence-based practices, it's aligned to the standards, and we just completed our pilot case study showing the overall effectiveness. To learn more about how your district can get curriculum access, head over to theautismhelper.com and click Curriculum Access.
Hi, I'm Sasha Long, special ed teacher and board-certified behavior analyst. Welcome to the Autism Helper podcast. I'm here to explore different strategies to improve the lives of individuals with autism.
Welcome back to the Autism Helper podcast. Today, I'm so excited to introduce Chris Wegner, aka the Speech Dude. I think he's hands down one of the most enthusiastic guests I've had on the podcast. He was such an absolute blast to talk to. Today, he's going to be sharing about neurodivergent affirming goals and neurodivergent affirming IEPs. I love the passion he brings to this topic and shares such great actionable ways to reframe assessment results, reframe your goals, reframe your discussions with parents. Lots of great tips in here. I can't wait for you to hear from Chris. I have his website and social media handles linked in the show notes. So let's go ahead and hear from the Speech Dude. Hi, Chris. Thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited for an awesome episode.
Me too. I love that energy too. It's right off the bat.
You know what? That's the thing about sometimes podcasts and audio. You got to make sure that the vibrations get through those sound speakers so everyone's energized.
That's true. Especially when you can't see it, right?
That's how we learn. I'm like, I want the energy. Get the energy cranking through the speakers. Here we go.
Okay, so I know this topic is going to equally energize you. So we're going to talk today about neurodiversity affirming goals and IEPs. Kind of a mouthful. Start us off with basically, what do you consider to be a neurodiversity affirming goal?
Gosh, you know, I'm just going to speak right off the cuff of like when I work with students and when it comes to that approach. But I'm going to go back a little bit. Usually, so I work as a speech pathologist. I've been in this field for 21 years, and 2 years prior to that, I was a special ed teacher. So this is my 23rd year working with kids with disabilities. It's been quite some time. And here's what I've learned, though. When I do assessments, the assessments are kind of set up to focus on deficits. So right out of the gates, we have a system that makes it a little bit challenging because we're looking at what are all the defaults or what are all the things that the kids can't do. And we're comparing our autistic students to non-autistic peers. So we're really essentially set up in a way to write reports that are deficit based. And so that's the challenging part. So we first come at it through what is working for the student and what creates an environment that can best help support the student. And then when we can start from there, that helps us frame goals a little bit better. So we want to be able to get information on how the student advocates for themselves. Are they asking for help in class? Is there times where maybe they have some sensory sensitivities and they need access to noise-canceling headphones or wearing loop ears? Maybe they need a sensory break. Maybe they need a safe person in the building to help co-regulate with, all of those things. But those aren't the questions that are asked on the assessments.
Yeah.
And so coming to your question, what makes a neurodiversity affirming goal? What makes a neurodiversity affirming goal is coming at it through a strengths base, not focusing on comparing the kids with their neurotypical or non-autistic peers, but where are they at right now? What are some of the things that do work for them? And so that's the first thing. The second thing is creating goals that match who they are, that keep their authenticity. And we hear that kind of sometimes through social media and through articles, is like, don't focus on teaching the kid to mask heavily or to be inauthentic. So we really think about, is this goal that I'm writing for the student, is it for the student or is it for the adult? That's like a huge piece to it. And that really is what helps me guide my goal writing, is this going to help empower the student? Is it going to help them be their true essential authentic self? Is this going to help foster natural conversations? Is it collaborative? Am I honoring what the student wants to work on? And is it flexible? Is it really helping the student access what works best for them? Sometimes, advocating doesn't necessarily mean raising your hand and saying, excuse me, teacher, but I didn't get the directions. Can you repeat that? Or can I wear my noise canceling? Sometimes it might be, emailing the teacher or writing it down or having an alternative mode of communicating their preferences and what works best for them. And then lastly, well, I should say two other things that are really important. A neurodiversity affirming goal helps the student with autonomy and helps the student advocate and helps the student in all contexts. So when I create goals for my students, it's not just a goal that works within my speech walls. It's a goal that works in all environments. And that might be in the cafeteria. That might be on a field trip. That might be, with a substitute in class. That might be outside of school when they go to the dentist or they get a haircut. Yeah, all of those things. And then I always think about it too. I guess the last point on this, I got a lot of
I love it. This is great.
You know what I should have said right at the beginning? I should have let the audience know that I have ADHD. And so the way my brain works is it's like kind of all over the place, but it all comes back to making sense. So bear with me.
Well, I also asked you like a huge question. So to be fair,
I was like, oh my gosh, I'm going to put it all together. But the other thing too is like with my own experience in having difficulties in my educational experience, knowing that it's hard for kids, kindergarten, first grade, second grade, third grade, if you're not connecting with your peers or if your differences can make the setting challenging, that in itself, people don't think like when you're not being heard or included, that's traumatizing. So I always come from a trauma-informed approach too and try to understand that when the kids are at school, I think about, what their past may have looked like and how can I best help support them so that way they feel safe at school, they feel connected at school, they've got people on campus on their side that are willing to help them meet those goals and just creating an entire campus full of support and offering that felt sense of safety. So all of those things, strengths-based, making it authentic, collaborating, focusing on autonomy and self-advocacy and trauma-informed are truly what make up a neurodiversity-affirming goal.
I love that. And I like, pointing back to what you said at the start about this like medical model and our assessments are all really rooted in what a student can't do. When you were talking about that, I had like a flashback to one of the first IEP meetings I sat in like 20 years ago as a new teacher. a psychologist reading that 3-year reeval. And mm-hmm. I was like horrified at like reading this to a parent. I'm like, God, how this parent must feel, you know, students functioning at 2-year-old level on this, 18-month-old level on this. I'm like, this is how we started the meeting. And they're like, well, you know, it's a 3-year reeval. So that's what we got to do. And I, you know, it's balancing, okay, fine, you have to do this for whatever legal reason. How do you balance those assessments that quote unquote have to be done with creating these like beautiful, great goals that you've talked about?
Oh my gosh. Honestly, that's the other thing that IEP teams, not the parents' end of it, but like on the IEP team, trying to take that perspective and being empathetic, knowing that, hey, you know, outside of school, this parent wants some support for their child because they're having some difficult times. And the last thing they need to do is go to a meeting that's 3 hours worth of like focusing on deficits. So really, there are ways to just reframe things that are more neuroaffirming. And so when I go over my reports, this is the beauty of it, actually, now that I think about it. So when you're in an IEP meeting, all it takes is one person to change the narrative or reframe the language. So I'll give you some examples here off the top of my head. You can hear a report that says, you know, the student perseverates or they're obsessed with Sonic the Hedgehog 3. That's all they ever talk about. They don't think about other people's thoughts. They're not perceptive of others. They don't engage in back and forth conversation. They only want to dive deep into their obsessions. And they can't stay seated and always moving around. So that's what we would commonly hear, right? Mm-hmm. And if I can take that information and reframe the way I say it in the way that's really the truth, people start to pick up on that. So like I'm on a campus of teachers, special ed teachers, gen ed teachers, the psych, who have listened to this enough times in the meeting where their language has really shifted. So here's what this would sound like on everything that I just told you. This student is passionate about anime and movies like Sonic the Hedgehog 3. They connect with their peers when provided access to being able to talk about their special interests. So if we can, we want to incorporate that into maybe the class or maybe into some conversations so we can foster those natural conversations and authentic friendships. And sometimes this student, if they start to feel overwhelmed or dysregulated, or maybe they have some needs for sensory input, you might see them stand up and move around in the class. So if we can offer some fidgets or some ways to meet those needs, we're really going to see that student shine. You see how I talked about the same student, but I just completely changed the way I spoke about the student. And that gets everybody shaking their head. Yes.
Yeah.
And then the parent goes, can you give me a high five? Because the way that you describe my child is exactly who they are. And thank you for that. And then from there, what I can do is I can help with whatever related services are there. Maybe it's the occupational therapist. And we can say, hey, so in the IEP, let's put some accommodations to meet these needs. Sensory break, access to fidgets, being able to wear noise-canceling headphones, you know, all of those types of things, being able to discuss or talk about their things they're passionate about. And then that's really how I go from it. Now, to be more specific, like on the psych testing, sometimes we'll get like the WISC and the Woodcock-Johnson with scores where it might say in the far below average range, or it might say like, you know, your ninth grader's at a third grade level or whatnot. And what I've noticed is that you could start that conversation by saying, I am going to go over some of the scores and I don't love the language that's used in these. So I'm just going to talk about the language that's in here just very briefly, but then we're going to talk about what are some things that we can include in the IEP. So that way we're getting all of the needs met. And then the parent is like, yeah, that's cool. I get how these forms are. And thank you for, you know, being upfront. But yeah, we don't really spend too much time, but we do as a team, you know, talk about some scores that, you know, are lower. We'll say, you know, they really struggled in working memory. Here's what we could do to help that. Mm-hmm. They really struggled with attention, or they really had a hard time with reading comprehension. Here's where the scores are at, but here's what we're going to do to help your child thrive based on these based on the input that and the data that we have.
At Ritual, we know what goes into the holiday season. The potluck planning, the gift giving, the spreadsheets. So this new year, take a moment for yourself with science-backed support that puts you first. So whether you're focusing on supporting foundational health with a clean vegan multivitamin or supporting your gut health with Symbiotic Plus, do it with 30% off your first month at ritual.com/podcast. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
There are some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with, like a large unexpected inheritance. An always-on-the-verge-of-death phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone, up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard, so you can get a new one. Just trade in any phone from our top brands on any unlimited plan. With new line on my plan, additional terms apply for trade-in and pay off your phone offer. See Verizon.com for details.
Well, it's super solutions focused too, versus that deficit model. It kind of just lists the problems without anything else, versus like your two examples, it was all about solutions and strategies versus like highlighting the struggles.
Oh my gosh, that is absolutely right. Isn't that life in general? It's like, let's not focus on problems. Let's focus on solutions.
Exactly.
Let's not focus on the things we hate. Let's focus on the things we love. Let's not focus on the things that broke our heart, but let's focus on the things that help us heal and move forward and expand our heart. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
All but of those things.
I think a lot of people are stuck, quote unquote, on IEP teams with people that maybe are not as collaborative or don't have this mindset. And I think that's a great point that you made, that you just have to model this like for your team. Like, hey, this is how we talk about a student in front of them, in front of their parents, when they're not here. And people do catch on to that and start to model that when they see it frequently enough.
Oh, absolutely. I love that. I have on our campus, we have some outside ABA support that comes in, and there's certain approaches that I use language to help shift and model. And that's how you create a collaborative model, is really coming in together and just saying, you know, I think that this student, if we can maybe give some autonomy on this, this might work. And then that's how you can approach coming in as a team is what you were saying, which is, yeah, just kind of working together and then modeling. And so that way everybody's on the same page. And I mentioned that just because sometimes in the world of neurodiversity affirming stuff, you hear different opinions on things, but working as a team and really collaborating and doing what's best for the student is the way to do it. And as you mentioned, modeling, I think for special ed teachers, for speech therapists, we all need it. You know, like if I model the language for everybody on the team, that's how everybody wins.
Yeah. So you talked about, you know, incorporating who the student is, their authenticity. What role do you want your students to take in the development of their IEP and these goals? How do you incorporate students in this whole process?
With my approach, just specifically as speech, I try to get input from four different angles. So I take what I know about this student and getting to know them in small groups, small social groups. I take input from what's going on in the class. I take input directly from the student and their caregiver. And those two things I look at and say, okay, where are we at here? And what are we going to prioritize so I can help the student? And that's a really important piece, because the way intrinsic motivation works for all of us is we want to have some type of say in our own goals. And so that's where the conversation comes with the family. Sometimes the family, or not even the family, it could be like a teacher, it could be somebody that says, you know, I noticed the student at lunchtime sits by themselves, they're on their phone playing Clash of Clans, and I'm worried that they're not interacting with their peers. I want them to speak more with their friends. The next step is, what about the student? Let's get their input. And a lot of times, not always, but a lot of times the student's like, no, actually that's the time that I am rebuilding my spoons because I'm all out. That's the time that I'm starting to get back to regulating. That's the time where I enjoy not being around people and socializing, because if I was forced into having to socialize and meet these people, it's just going to burn me out. So I take that into consideration, and that becomes the conversation for how we direct goals.
And that's a great example of like, is the goal for the adult or for the child? Because like the adult thinks the child, quote unquote, should, you know, socialize at that time, but they're not seeing the whole picture.
Absolutely. And as a parent, because I'm a parent of five boys now, that's wild. Like, oh, I got a basketball team. We've got the Lakers, we've got the Clippers, and now we've got team speech, dude. I got my whole team. And that's like the thing as a parent that I ask myself, because we say what are the main things that you want for your kids? And then the first thought is, well, I want independency. I want my child to be happy, and you know, I want them to graduate or whatever it might be. The tricky thing with that is what we want as that might not be the same for this to get them there. Mm-hmm. And so as an adult, like for as a parent, I'm like, well, if they could just go meet three or four friends, they're going to be happy. And so we start to push them into these groups that aren't comfortable for them, or we start to push goals that are like, hey, just go initiate a conversation with the peer, and then, or back and forth conversation or whatever it might be. And what ends up happening oftentimes is that it inadvertently creates more stress, because the student is like, well, I've been trained that I have to go up to people that I don't know and strike up a conversation and add thoughts to what they're thinking about and have a back and forth small chit chat. And then they become hyper vigilant and they're like, did I say the right thing or did I not say the right thing? Did I initiate with the right conversation or did I not initiate? And then what ends up happening is, over a couple years of that type of approach, it ends up getting a kid that says, now I'm burnt out or I'm stressed, I don't want to go to school, mm-hmm. or we see more anxiety. So we really have to consider like, what we think as parents is effective might not work in the long run. So what do we do to help eliminate or to reduce the stress? So the answer to that is
how, go ahead.
Oh yeah. I was going to say, and the answer to that is to really incorporate special interest, allow choice, to connect them with peers who are similar to that maybe have a similar neurotype. And then just making it to where conversations can happen naturally. Like in my office, I have the Nintendo Wii, and we have games like Super Smash Brothers Brawl and Mario Kart, and we play all sorts of games like Headbands, but I make it to where it's fun, to where conversations happen naturally. And I can also tie in my other goals like problem solving and figurative language, but making it to where they're not pressured or forced to have to perform. I think that's a really important thing to consider.
I think that performance piece and that force piece is why sometimes social skills goals miss the mark. And you can see what you said, that like snowballs to this like burnt out kid that not only is struggling and maybe not happy, but also the social skills they're engaging in aren't particularly natural or even like neurotypical at that point, because it's so inauthentic to them because it's so robotic and forced.
Oh, totally. It's like if you go with your significant other to a wedding and then you get to the wedding and the ordained minister was like, hey, so I know that you're assigned to table number 4 with the people that you know, but you're going to have to go sit at table number 10 with all of those people over there of the relatives you don't
My
know.
My worst
and
nightmare.
By the way, yeah. And then you have to strike up a conversation about something that you don't want to talk about. And then you have to hold a conversation with them for 3 minutes. Make sure you make eye contact, smile, make sure your tone of voice is okay. Like you'd be like, I hate weddings. I'm never going back again. It's like we want the kids to do it, but then we're like, as adults, we're like, huh, now that you put it that way, you're right. Yeah. I don't want that.
No, it's true. I mean, I was in a school this fall in high school, and they were working on greetings, and the way they were, and it was an older teacher. So I was like, maybe there's like just an age divide here, whatever. But she was like prompting this 15-year-old to like go up to peers and be like, hello, hello. And I was like, do you see any other 15-year-old saying hello like that? Like, watch how 15-year-old boys greet each other. They like grunt and they like fist bump. Like they don't say hello, like
they
so
don't.
Formal, you know? And it was so hard to watch for both ends. Like no one was enjoying this.
Oh, exactly. I know. Those situations I see happen and it's like, no. that's even how it is with like trick-or-treating with my kids. And sometimes I have one of my children who it could be it could create some anxiety going up to the door and saying trick or treat, or when you get the candy and saying thank you. So I just model. I just model, and the other kids will do it. And that, without no pressure, I don't have any expectations. But because I don't have expectations on that, it makes my life easier too as a parent. I'm like, all right, that's all right. We'll get there. And if not, that's okay too. As long as I'm not forcing, I'm like, you better say trick or treat, or say thank you.
Yeah, it's also just trick or treating. Like, it's like sometimes we put so much pressure on something that, like, in the grand scheme of things, is really not that big of a deal.
Oh, yeah, yeah, exactly. I know, exactly.
So if you're, what advice do you have for parents that are like, oh my God, this is like the world I want my kid to live in, but this is not the school they go to? Like, how can you kind of push your teachers, your clinicians, your staff along the way and kind of see this viewpoint and mindset?
There's a couple things, but I think that, gosh, because I have multiple viewpoints, like from sitting at the IEP table for a family or a parent, I think that one of the best things to do is to, as I did just a little bit ago, the reframing of my language to help guide the IEP team. So, for example, and this works really effectively, coming in with like, so let me go back a little bit. On the IEP, there is a page called the Present Levels page. And this is pretty ubiquitous between all of the states. It just might be worded a little bit different. But they have one line and it says, parent concerns in relation to educational progress. That's what the line says specifically. And the thing I don't love about that way that it's framed is then the parents are automatically put in a situation to say, oh, my concerns. And then it just kind of gets your heart beating. Like, you got anxiety, like, well, my concerns are that they're not going to have a peer to connect with. My concerns are that they're not going to, that they're going to fall behind in reading, or they're not going to really get through math, or my concerns are, and then there's just a laundry list of it. I think as a parent, one of the best things to come into there is what are your priorities? Like, mm-hmm. what are your priorities? And then coming in with a snapshot picture. So I always recommend this to families at the beginning of the year, or maybe even second semester, which is a one-page snapshot of what are the things that work and that help for the child. So the teacher kind of gets to know who that student is on a personal level. So it's like, my son, Liam, loves Minecraft, and he likes to connect with peers when talking about anime and comics. One thing that has really helped him is if he's allowed for a sensory break, or printed notes have really been helpful because it's hard to keep up with the notes. And a couple things that help in the academic setting is he's not one to raise his hand or to get into small groups. So if you wouldn't mind seeing when there's small groups, guiding or letting him know in advance if there's any, classroom participation, so he's not called on randomly. Like, all of those types of things give the tips and the pointers so the team can be guided of, okay, this is how this student is and this is what works for them. And I think that's a really effective approach. The other really key thing, because I sit as a parent and as a service provider on the IEP team, is focusing on collaboration. We hear that all the time, but I think that's a really important key point to make. Is, and that's true for special education teachers and the IEP team. You got to have that trust, and you got to have that ability to collaborate, because when things don't work, you want to be able to have another IEP meeting or have a discussion of, okay, well, what can we do? Because this strategy didn't work. Mm-hmm. Once there's confrontation or once there's distrust, the whole thing falls apart. It's like, if you think about it, because I'm 46 now, and that means that in 2001, I was in my college years, and I remember being able to go to the airport And you could just literally walk through the airport. There was no security. I was like, I got a bottle of tequila. I'm going to Cabo. You know, it was like nobody cared. And then that's because everybody trusted everybody. We're like all happy, you know, yeah. You're happy on the airplane. And then 9/11 happened. And once that happened, till this day, here we are, like, you know, 20 some odd years later, 24 years later, once you break trust, it's so hard to get it back. Yeah. And that's like how it is on the IEP team too. It's like collaboration. That's so important for teachers to know too, you know, department chairs is building that trust and building what can we do to help the students so they can thrive. And how can we create an environment so the student feels safe? Honestly, our brains work in two modes, and they work in either connection or protection. That's it. So like when the student comes to school, what might that look like if they're working in connection? They're raising their hand, they're talking to their peers, they're asking for help, they're smiling, they're sitting in class, they're thriving. And even at home, like as a parent, what does connection look like? Well, connection looks like they're, you know, asking if they can grab a snack out of the kitchen. They're saying, hey, can we go to Target and grab a Sonic the Hedgehog 3 t-shirt? Or can I go in the backyard and jump on the trampoline? Or they sit down with you or whatever it is, right? We know yeah. what that looks like. Or they're in protection, and protection can look like a number of ways at school, which might be overwhelm, anxiety, that might be executive functioning, overstimulation, sensory needs not being met. And that can present itself on the outside as running out of the class, eloping, being physically or verbally aggressive, shutting down, all of those types of things. So, and that could be at home too, like protection, like child's crying, child throws something at you, child calls you a bad name. It's like, okay, they're in protection mode. What do I need to be curious about so I can get them back into connection mode? That's the kind of IEP that we want, is how do we create a situation where the student, the child, is going to an environment or into a classroom or into a school setting where they're in connection mode, where they're feeling safe and comfortable. That's like the really big overarching idea that we want. You know, if they're eloping, if they're hitting...
deficit-based goals is not going to get us there.
Owning a boat comes with a number of perks, like being able to say, ahoy, or land ho, and not feel weird about it. So here's another perk. GEICO's boat insurance offers access to the largest towing fleet on the water. And with specialist support from agents that are as passionate about boating as you are, there's so much value that you'll want to say, shiver me timbers, and not feel weird about that either. Get more with GEICO.
Deficit-based goals aren't going to get us there. And a lot of times, let me speak a little bit on this too. I just feel like sometimes if the student is exhibiting on the outside some of those challenging behaviors, then it's already telling us that that student's in protection mode and we need to create something where they feel connected. You know, because like if we have a student where a task is too hard or they're running out of the class, or if they're given a task or an assignment and they throw their Chromebook or they hit their neighbor, that just means that their brain's like, hey, I don't feel safe. I feel overwhelmed. I got anxiety or whatever it might be. We come at it through that lens. That's like a whole different kind of mind shift. Mm-hmm. And looking at it through a different lens. Like I put on my scuba gear and I go exploring. I'm like, okay, what is it that we got here that's creating this sense of not being safe or feeling overwhelmed? And then how do we recreate an environment or structure some goals that can help the student thrive? A lot of times, so as a speech therapist, my goals will emphasize self-advocacy. So I work with my students on learning about what works for them, what accommodations work for them. And then over time, we work on who they can go to get those accommodations. The same with following directions. Like, you know, me as ADHD, I can have challenges that might not ever go away. So like my fiance, Jesse, might say, Chris, you know what? Can you run inside, grab my keys and grab the backpack with the diapers and some wipes and then come back out? By that time, I'm like, I'll get inside the house. I'm like, wait, what? So,
you're the like IEP making a snack, goes,
right? Like I'm in the house. I like sit down and watching the football game. No, but like, this is not uncommon for that to happen to me. So the goal for me is not following directions. The goal for me is to ask for clarification and find ways that can help get that need met. And that's the same type of goal for the student. So rather than a student will follow 2 to 3 step directions, it's student will develop or improve or increase their ability to ask questions or to seek clarification. Because all too often, the language that's used in the curriculum can be confusing, or the teacher goes too fast, or the student might have like auditory processing challenges or differences. So if they really work on, you know, that piece, you know, could you slow down? Or I didn't get the first part. Can you say it again? Or when you or lecturing, it's really hard for me to keep up. Would you mind printing out some of the notes or the PowerPoint or whatever it might be? Because that goal right there, getting better at asking questions and seeking clarification, is a lifelong goal that works in all contexts. And so those are kind of the ideas and approaches that I come at it with.
I love that. I mean, we all use self-advocacy skills every day, and we want to start teaching our kids even at young ages. Like, I think we so often hold off on that, like, oh, junior high, high school, but like, no, we can teach our 6-year-olds to self-advocate and 10-year-olds and to start that process of getting more and more comfortable for that, because that's what will lead to lifelong success, not just following a 3-step direction in X amount of seconds.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, it like starts from day one. That's what I do with my, it's great because the practice that I do at work is the same strategies that I do with my students at home. And it's really helpful. And I find what works and what doesn't work. But yeah, that self-advocacy piece is huge. The other big piece is the self-awareness piece and learning that being different is okay. And that is so important. A lot of times the students, because I work with teenagers, is that they hear the word autism and they automatically connect it to something bad. So we talk about, what does being neurodivergent mean? Why being different is okay, but also how do we access things that can be challenging for us, and how do we access the accommodations and supports, and who do we talk to so the challenging things become less challenging? That's really a really crucial part, self-awareness and learning about oneself.
I mean, for like every high schooler too, not like just, yeah, needs to work.
Oh, honestly, yeah. That's such a vital step, self-awareness and being confident or okay with who you are.
Oh, I love this. I love all these ideas. I feel like you could chat about this forever. Where, Chris, can people go to learn more from you?
Oh, at the local Starbucks, I'll be there. No, I'm just kidding.
you'll make a cappuccino and give you
a... It's so funny because that's where I get a lot of my thoughts and creativity, is just sitting at a coffee shop in Los Angeles, just being like, oh, this would make for a good Instagram reel, or oh, this would be for a good TikTok. But there's 2 things, two ways that they could locate me. The first is if the audience is interested in learning about neurodivergent traits and how to work with kids and teach them these things, like talking about neurodiversity in an effective way, talking about self-advocacy, sensory processing differences. I have an activity book that I wrote. So if they go to speechdude.com /book, so speechdude.com/book, that's where the book's at. If they want to connect with me on social media and learn more about like the assessments, or just like when I have conferences and, you know, when I on podcasts like this that I'll be promoting, you could head to Instagram and find me at @speechdude, and then message me the word bananas, because it's bananas. That's my dude bot. I've got an automated dude bot. So go to my Instagram @speechdude, and then message me bananas, BANANAS.
Everyone knows how to spell that.
Hey, that's why I chose that word, because when I say bananas, they're like, bananas, beat. And then they start dancing. They're like, you know what? I know what I'm going to listen to right now.
It's going to be in everyone's head for the rest of the day.
That's awesome.
Well, thank you, Chris, so much for joining us. And I will put all of your links in the show notes. Thanks so much.
Awesome. This was a great conversation. Thanks so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to the Autism Helper podcast. If you liked what you heard and want to hear more, hit subscribe. It would mean a lot to me if you left some feedback. Whether I'm working one-on-one with a student, doing a podcast like this one, or presenting for a PD, my goal is always to provide as much value as I can. So your feedback really helps me make sure I'm doing just that. If you have other topics you'd like me to cover, leave in the feedback or message me on social media. You can follow me at The Autism Helper on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and Pinterest, or visit my website, theautismhelper.com. Thanks again for listening.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to leave up holiday decorations year-round. Others have the need to use their garage as practice space for their new metal band. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.
Having the right resources for your classroom is essential to making sure your classroom is running smoothly. At the Autism Helper Shop, we have all of the resources you need to make sure you have the behavior, communication, and curriculum supports for your students. Within our shop, we have adapted books, task cards, resources aligned to the VBMAP and the ABLES, behavior plan flowcharts, data sheets, curriculum. Everything you need, whether you are an early childhood teacher or a high school teacher, we have all of the resources that will meet those students' needs. So head over to shop.theautismhelper.com to check out all of our resources.